Reading from the book of Isaiah, chapter 60, where we hear a magnificent vision of Jerusalem's future. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will rise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you. The young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba, shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. May God add blessing to the reading and the hearing of these words. If you would please stand, if you are able, for the reading of the gospel. Reading from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, where we hear Matthew's version of Jesus' birth and the coming of the wise men. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired to them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. These are the words of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Oh, that's where I put that. Have you had that moment? I mean, seriously, I know you have. You know, that thing that you hid so well that not even you could find it? And then randomly one day, maybe looking for something else, you happened to cross it. Oh, that's where that is. I confessed a week or so before Christmas that I had locked my keys in my truck in my garage at home for lunch one Tuesday, and I couldn't find the extra key. So my AAA guy came and unlocked my truck, and I got back to work. And I looked off and on for that key over the next several days, thinking maybe that would not be the only time I would ever lock myself out of my truck, either in my garage or somewhere else. And then I proceeded to forget about it and figured I'd have to spend the money to order a whole new fob. But then the other day, not even kidding, I was looking through my backpack. Now, my backpack I only carry with my laptop when I either fly somewhere on a plane or I go home for Christmas to see my parents for a few days. And I had done that. So I was going through an outside pocket of my backpack, looking for my retainers, because I thought I had lost them or maybe left them at my parents, and I came across those. But as I reached in further into the pocket, Eureka! My spare key to my truck. I have no idea when, where, or why I put that key in that outside pocket of that backpack. And believe me, as you might imagine, as probably happens with you as well, I have now put it somewhere where at least right now I can remember where it is, and it will be easily accessible if I lock my keys or when I lock my keys in my truck again. But that moment, that aha moment, oh, there it is, that eureka moment, oh, now I understand, that's the heart of epiphany. The word epiphany comes from the Greek word epiphaneia, which literally means manifestation. But more nuanced definitions would tell us that it's an intuitive insight that comes to us most often through an event that is both simple and striking. Does that not define epiphany? At least the way we in the Western church celebrate it. As I said earlier in the service, on January 6th, as is traditional in the Eastern Orthodox Church, often it's January 19th. And what it celebrates is our understanding or our revelation of God's fulfilling God's promise to come to earth in human form in the one we know as Jesus, and that that is revealed by these astrologers, perhaps from Persia, who find their way to Jesus following the light of a star. Well, they find their way close to where Jesus is born, following the light of a star. A revelation. Do you remember? Do you remember Simeon from last week, that old prophet that is in the temple when Mary and Joseph bring Jesus for that rite of consecration to the Lord of this child at 27 days old? And Simeon says, "Lord, now you're dismissing your servant in peace, for my eyes have seen the salvation that you have prepared in the presence of all people, a light of revelation for the Gentiles and glory for your people Israel." And the Magi illuminate the truth of that prophecy, because the Magi not only are Gentiles, anyone not born into the chosen people of Israel, but they aren't even from that region like the shepherds are. They're from as far off a place as you might imagine. And says to us from the beginning that part of the revelation of God's light is that indeed God's embrace, in a way that's never been communicated before, God's embrace is for all people of the world. The light of the star shines everywhere. You cannot limit where it lands. And what do we most often think on this particular Sunday? Brian sang it after our offering. We three kings of Orient are. You have to sing it like that. Brian, I'm sorry. I can't imitate you. Bearing gifts, we traverse afar, field and fountain, moor and mountain, following yonder star. And that all is great, isn't it? That's just a lovely sentiment. Do you know what verse that we didn't have him sing? The fourth verse. Myrrh is mine, its bitter perfume breathes a life of gathering gloom. Sorrowing, sighing, breathing, dying, sealed in a stone-cold tomb. Oh, star of wonder, star of... It's sort of an odd juxtaposition, isn't it? We sort of want to do our life that way. We sort of want to do our life the way that first verse is. Let's just stop there. Let's sing that first verse in the chorus and stop there. And that's sort of what we want to do with this story of the Magi. It makes complete sense. The light of revelation of the Messiah, of God come to earth in human form. We have everything to celebrate. It's why we come on Christmas Eve. It's why we light our candles from person to person and we lift them up on that last verse of Silent Night. And the pastor says, look around you. You are the light of the world, and it feels so good. And then Epiphany. And we always stop with the 12th, we most often as pastors stop with the 12th verse of the Gospel of Matthew. Because if we read on, we find out that the revelation, the manifestation of God come to earth does not make everything bad stop. It does not suddenly make human beings perfect in their love for one another or for God. Immediately after these astrologers from the East, which prove the point that God's love is for everyone, that God's salvation is prepared in the presence of all peoples, as Simeon says, they are warned in a dream, these magi, to return home by a different road. And then if you read further, it says that Herod becomes infuriated that they avoid him, because he has asked them to come back on their way home to tell him exactly where the Christ child is located. And they don't do that. And in his fury and in his fear that there will be a challenger to his throne, he mandates that all children in the region, 2 years and younger, be killed. And Matthew's gospel then quotes Jeremiah from the 31st chapter. A voice is heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation. Rachel will not be consoled because her children are no more. Myrrh is mine, its bitter perfume. Breathe a life of gathering gloom. That's not what we want to hear. That's not what we want to see with these magi that we put in our nativity sets. That remind us this is why we give each other gifts at Christmas, because they brought these precious gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and they knelt at the feet of Jesus, and before Jesus even has begun his ministry, and they offer him these gifts, and we want to just stop it there. But here's the deal, friends. Even as your pastor, when I want only to bring messages that inspire and encourage and remind you of how marvelous the world is, if I stop there, then I'm not being fair to you or to God in reminding us that we don't have a God of fair weather only. We have a God who is there in the worst of our nightmares. And those are the verses that immediately follow the Magi reaching the birth of this child. That as God is with those astrologers as they follow the light of that star, so God is with those who wail and lament and cannot be consoled. Don't we want that God? Don't we want to grow in our faith and our trust of that God? And we might say to ourselves, well, if God was going to bother coming to earth, why didn't God just start preventing all of that? Why do bad things happen to good people? And I cannot stand here today and give you a conclusive answer about that, because I don't know. But here is what I do know. God is present with us in the midst of that sorrow, in the midst of that wailing, in the midst of that lament. And God knows what that fear is like, because the scriptures also tell us that having heard in a dream that that's what Herod intended to do, that Mary and Joseph indeed fled to Egypt where they didn't know anyone and stayed there until they were told that Herod had died so that they could safely come back. And it's not that Jesus was more valuable than any other parent's child. We don't completely understand the vision of God. But we do know that part of what we learned in Jesus' presence with us on earth is that we would not be abandoned in the midst of that kind of heartbreak and heartache. And indeed, Jesus' own parents will know that heartache and that heartbreak at the end of their son's life, which will end before theirs, which is never supposed to be the way it is. It's difficult to deal with, isn't it? That odd juxtaposition of this marvelous definition of epiphany where we have these usually unexpected events that bring a striking new learning and understanding in a sudden moment that is very simple and very striking, that partnered with that then is deep sorrow. But even 400 or 500 years before that, as the prophet Isaiah, we heard from this morning that Cheryl read, the prophet Isaiah says, arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. And if we just stopped there, that would be great. And the situation, the context is that God's people have been exiled, and they've been allowed to come back safely. And we would think that return would be glorious and wonderful and marvelous. And in its own way, it is. And yet when they get back, guess what? The city is still in rubble. The temple still lying in ruins. And the people that are still there who have been left to survive are scratching out a living. Just enough to feed themselves, perhaps, and their families. And there is an overwhelming amount of work to be done to rebuild. It's not what they expected. It's not what they wanted. It's not what the vision of their ancestors two generations before who were taken into exile. It's not the vision that was painted for them of what Jerusalem was like before they were overwhelmed by the great enemy. And yet they have a choice. So Isaiah is bringing this word of hope and this word of promise. But understand, Isaiah doesn't do that without an understanding of reality, because Isaiah goes on to say, for darkness is covering the earth and deep darkness the peoples. But then Isaiah says, but rise up and look around, for God's light will arise upon you, and God's glory will surround you, and people will come to the brightness of your dawn, and sons will come from far away, and daughters will be carried on their nurses' arms, and you will know the radiance and the glory of God's light. So this sort of odd rhythm of understanding that God is a God of the best times in our lives, and God is there during the worst times of our lives. That God understands the words we need to hear that keep us going in hope, and God understands we sometimes need to name for one another the hardness and the difficulty and the complexity that we live in. Because friends, that's the reality that we live every day, isn't it? And to pretend that by coming into these walls, we are only going to, as people of faith, talk about good things, I believe that does a disservice to you. It does to my faith. Because I want to know that God is with me in the grittiness of the hard times. And that God's spirit will not let my spirit be broken by that which is most difficult. These astrologers, their faith and trust in God as Gentiles, as not part of the chosen, is so strong that as our words of welcome at the beginning said, they persistently and steadily and methodically make their way on this journey that perhaps took upwards of 2 years. They choose to have that faith in God. Herod does not. Herod chooses to stay where he is. Herod chooses fear and darkness over faith and trust in the light of a star. It's a pretty stark comparison. And I would put it before you and me both today, because it's true for us as well. We have the same choice. We can decide God's presence is there in the good parts and God abandons us in the bad. We can decide that God isn't trustworthy because God doesn't prevent everything bad from happening to us. Or we can decide that our faith is most real when we trust in God in all the times of our lives. In faith, Isaiah asks us to stand up and look around, to arise and shine, for God's light has come, and the glory of God shows around us. And even though there is darkness covering the earth and the peoples, God's light will not be overcome. We can choose to trust and believe that, or we can decide to let fear define us. Like Herod, we can pull into the walls of our self-built palaces. And we can decide that we'll wait there until God wreaks revenge on those who disagree with us. I'm not sure that's a life that's the gift of aha, of manifestation, of a Messiah that shows us how to live in the light of love even through death itself. So that's my challenge for us today. It's really very simple. Will we choose to continue moving into this year, risking faith in God and trusting in the light? Or will we give in to fear and live in the gloom of darkness? Choose with me, faith over fear. Amen.